I'm a columnist in Chicago. I give my opinions and I get paid for it. But even given your opinion, you try to be fair. At least I think so. At least I think I try. And I fail a lot of times. I'm not perfect. I did defend Bernie Sanders, though. And people liked me, or at least the left liked me, until I mocked the impeachment. And then they hated me and wanted me fired. But in all that, Jim Lehrer died the other day. You know him. Longtime news anchor for the McNeil Lehrer Hour, PBS. And he had some rules. And I think that our media today should think about those rules, especially. I'd like to think my friends on the left, which means probably most of the media, would think about it when you're mocking voters and call them stupid and venal and idiotic because they don't agree with you. That might be good for clicks and troll bait. I don't know if it's good for journalism, but that maybe that's just me because I'm a minority now. Anyway. Jim Lehrer's rules. 1. Do nothing I cannot defend. 2. Cover, write, and present every story with the care I would want if the story were about me. 3. Assume there is at least one other side or version to every story. 4. Assume the viewer is as smart and caring and good a person as I am. 5. Assume the same about all people on whom I report. 6. Assume personal lives are a private matter until a legitimate turn in the story absolutely mandates otherwise. 7. Carefully separate opinion and analysis from straight news stories and clearly label everything. 8. Do not use anonymous sources or blind quotes except on rare and monumental occasions. No one should be allowed to attack another anonymously. The 9th of Jim Lehrer's rules, one that applies to every TV personality and the news presenters today. I am not in the entertainment business. I'm going to think about that. Good rules. At the Tribune, we, there's a column. People have columns and opinions. There are editorials and there's news. And most newspapers do label it. You don't see that on TV, though, and you don't see it in radio. And that's the difference, right? That's what you call media. When people hate the media, they hate the fact that you're not labeling yourself. If you're a conservative commentator, fine, or liberal commentator, fine. Then they should run a crawl, liberal commentator, conservative commentator, guy who took the Bush money, guy who took Axelrod Obama money, or woman. But they don't. They present it as if it's wisdom instead of agenda. And that's dangerous for a republic, especially since everybody gets their news on TV now. I mean, who reads anymore? Reading's hard. Reading's tough, especially when you get challenged, when ideas get challenged, not personalities. One, my rule is, don't make fun of people who don't think like you do when they're voters. Politicians are fair game on all sides, but mocking voters for their beliefs might make you feel good. You can laugh about it. You can say, hey, I was just joking. Ha ha ha. You can do all that, but you know in your heart what you're doing. And so do they. And they're your customers. So figure it out. Today, on the Chicago Way, as always, Jeff Carlin, WGN executive producer of the Rokan Show, and our special guest, longtime attorney with much experience prosecuting cases, running for state's attorney of Cook County, Donna Moore. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, a guy who might be looking for an apartment in the city. And you know where you are? Between Kim Fox, Donna Moore, Bill Conway, between the combine and the Democratic machine. Oh, yeah, combine's back. Democratic machine's always here. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
As I told you, we have Donna Moore, candidate for Cook County State's Attorney here. It is the most important and hottest race in Cook County. The election, the Democratic primary, is on March 17th. It's three main candidates. Kim Fox, who's in being endorsed by every, union that Tony Perkwick will get for her. She hasn't yet been endorsed by Jussie Smollett, but that should happen soon. She should have a news conference on that. Bill Conway, the young candidate, Democrat, doesn't have a lot of experience, but he is on the attack, and he's got a lot of money from his dad, the boss of the Carlyle Group, and that's becoming an issue. And then we have the third candidate, who's actually a lawyer. Her name is Donna Moore. She's been Cook County prosecutor in the felony division, Cook County State's Attorney. She's been a prosecutor for the United States Attorney's Office. She's been the lead counsel for the Illinois Gaming Board. She has argued cases, unlike Kim Fox, she's argued cases before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, the appellate court, which I guess is a redundancy, sorry, and also the Illinois Supreme Court. Donna Moore, welcome to the Chicago Way.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, did I get that wrong?
The Seventh Circuit, the Illinois Appellate Court, and the Illinois Supreme Court.
Okay.
So, there was a distinction.
You've done all this, and you've been a lawyer for a long time. You're highly experienced. You've handled felony cases.
Yes.
You put people in jail. When you see the two candidates, the incumbent Kim Fox D, Jussie Smollett, and Bill Conway D, Dad Carlyle Money, what do you think of the quality and qualifications as lawyers of these people?
I believe that experience and judgment actually matter. People tell me not so much in Chicago, Cook County. I think the voters are ready for a change. When you hear the news every day about who's being indicted, which politicians, state or local, I think experience matters. And if you have the experience, that gives you better judgment. None of my opponents were in the felony trial division. They haven't tried amongst them all. I think they have two juries among them. And you have to understand how the office works because you have to lead your prosecutors.
So who had the juries?
I think
Conway?
I think Conway had one felony jury, and Kim, I believe...
The police officer, I think, yeah.
I believe argued, did closing in a felony case.
Remember which one?
It was one where a girl threw acid on her ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend or something.
Okay, but not a lot of day-to-day murders, rapes.
They weren't in the felony trial division.
Right.
They weren't assigned to a courtroom.
So when you're let us in on the secret, a lot of that is political. I can tell you how many parents have come to me saying, my daughter just graduated, or my son just graduated law school. They weren't that good of a student, but, you know, I'm raising a lot of money. And how do I get the kid into state's attorney's office? And a lot of, and let's be honest, realistic, just like people use their clout to get their kid into public schools that are walled off because of, you know, residency rules, they also clout their kids into state's attorney. But there comes a time, I would think, when wheat has to be separated from chaff, and the good lawyers, the good young lawyers, become part of the felony division. Is that how it works, or is that just, you know, John Cass's old cynicism?
In part, yes. I was actually got into the state's attorney's office, not through any clout, but they did on-campus interviews at Georgetown, where I went to law school. I was able to fairly quickly become a supervisor in appeals and then moved pretty quickly through the office. I think that's one of the things. Traditionally, there are jobs that come through politics. And obviously, the politics that we're so used to in Chicago, you know, give other kinds of favors. But the office needs to be professional. We have a lot of good prosecutors in that office, but they need a leader and they need teaching. You know, we're getting too many cases overturned in the appellate court and convictions overturned because of the lack of experience and training of our prosecutors.
One way to train prosecutors is to let the newbies work misdemeanor court.
That's where you start. It's like anything else. You start out in misdemeanor court. You'll learn how to do stuff. You make your mistakes on smaller cases, right, and then you move up.
What happens if you don't charge misdemeanors? Where do the prosecutors? Because it looks like Kim Fox's main goal here is not to put people in prison.
As a prosecutor, I always hear these conflicting things. People say we need to reform the system and we need to be more progressive. But being progressive doesn't mean catch and release. And it doesn't mean that you don't hold people accountable. So even in a misdemeanor case, you want somebody who's charged and found guilty to admit that they did something wrong. That doesn't mean you put them in prison and throw away the key.
Right.
But unless you have somebody admit that they did something wrong, how can they move forward? What's happening in retail theft is that people are just not being charged, and now retail theft are turning into armed robberies.
How so?
Because they're going into stores with guns.
There are many stories, and you can see the videos because the videos come out, of gangs of kids and youths who go in there and smash and grab gangs, and they grab purses and all the purses and, you know, that's kind of stuff that I don't buy for my wife because I don't have the money to do it. On Michigan Avenue, mm-hmm. And what, you can steal $999 worth of stuff and not face criminal charges?
Correct. Kim announced very early in her tenure that she was not going to prosecute retail theft under $1,000, and by the way, if you didn't have 10 prior convictions. So what happens is, this is not, let's be clear, this is not a young person going into a store and stealing a candy bar because they're hungry. These are organized gangs that are going in, some at the same time every week, by the way, and clearing out in a department store or drugstore whole areas because it takes a lot to get $1,000. Store security doesn't do anything anymore because they know the police won't do anything, and the police won't do anything because they know they can't get charges. And so it's a never ending circle of a problem.
I was a child. As a child, I went to a special daycare from, you know, that we called it Greek daycare, where you go to the store with dad and mom and you work. Okay, I'm sorry. I worked since I was 8 years old, cleaning milk cases and all that, and pack groceries. And also the one highlight would be when we had a shoplifter. Would be like the break in the routine, right? But stealing from a store it's on a margin of 1% or 2% profit, and everyone working 15 hours a day and the kids working after school, that could be devastating to the family. What I mean, I don't think Jean Valjean is going to prison for stealing the loaf of bread. I think it's what does anyone think of the shopkeeper?
Well, listen, the shopkeepers pay and the consumers ultimately pay because you have to raise prices to make up for the loss. But here's the thing. We want to hold people accountable for what they do. And if somebody steals, what you want to do is not assuming it's a first or second time or whatever, you know, what you want to do is you want to hold them accountable. You want to find a solution other than putting them in prison because that just makes them a better criminal. And you want them to be back at work, not back stealing. And that's where it's not necessarily.
So you steal $900 worth of Coach bags or whatever they are. That means you get one and a half. But say you and all your friends do. You steal $1,000 worth of stuff. That's okay?
It's not
okay to be a thief.
It's not
okay. You stole all this. Let me help you now. Let me give you job training.
Well, it's not okay to steal. That's where you need the accountability. You need someone to say, this is not the right path I'm on. So let's figure out from our punishment standpoint what you do. Now, sometimes, you know, part of the problem is when we talk about things about nonviolent offenders, you have to look at the whole person that you're dealing with. And the criminal justice system is case by case. You can't make these blanket statements because every case has something unique about it. And the question is this the first offense? Is it the 25th offense? Do they have an armed robbery in their background? So when you get somebody in your courtroom, that's where your prosecutorial discretion comes in. But you have the whole file, if you will, about what this person has done. Is there a parent that is interested in what happens to this young person? Is the person in school? Were they in school? Are they part of a gang? Those are all things that go in for you as a prosecutor to make the right decision on what to do with a case, but not to charge and not to prosecute. That's just carte blanche. We're one of the top five cities now for retail theft.
And I think one of the issues, too, is it's an information campaign, too. These policies were announced and it was heralded as like, oh, look, this is what's going to be. And, you know, criminals do stupid things, but they're not stupid. And they know this, that they see these benchmarks, these thresholds being raised. I mean, how do you see that as being, if you were in this position? I mean, are you going to be going out there and touting these great things you're doing because those things are going to give you cachet with people in, say, Hollywood or somewhere else? Or is it something more of like, we're going to do this, we're going to do case by case? I mean, that seems like there's something there to be said about not showing your hand.
But we have two justice systems in our county. We have justice for most of the people, and then we have justice for the rich, famous, and politically connected. I believe the law is the law. I believe you have one justice system. I believe you hold people accountable. Again, that doesn't mean everybody's thrown in prison. That means that you charge crime, because that's my job as the state's attorney. You know, the criminal justice system is the last stop for failed social programs. So when people want to talk about reform, yes, there are things you can do within the criminal justice system, but the reform needs to happen on the social programs in the neighborhoods to stop folks from getting into the justice system to begin with.
And we know that after trillions of dollars and 60 years of social programs, look at Chicago and see how wonderful the West and South Sides are.
That's right.
Okay, come on, let's be real. All right, let's get to the meat of it. First, why should you be elected over these people?
I bring three things that my opponents don't have: legal credentials, felony trial experience, and independence. And that independence is from a political machine or an ATM machine. And I am experienced And I actually have a passion and want to do this job. This isn't a stepping stone for me. I don't want to run for Senate in the future. I want to be the lawyer for the people of Cook County.
And you ran last time. How did you do?
I did. I ran last time for the same reasons.
You ran against Alvarez and Fox, and you came in a distant third.
I did.
And so you do have the credentials, but do you have the viability?
I think times have changed, and I think in the last 3 years, Kim was the hand-picked person that Tony Preckwinkle wanted in that job. Tony Preckwinkle picks the public defender. She now picked the state's attorney. She has control over the budget. She controls the criminal justice system.
She controls the court, the budget of the Cook County criminal courts, the judges.
I don't think that's a good idea. It's hard for me to believe that in a county with a budget of $3 billion plus, Kim Fox can't find a public corruption case. So I think, look, sometimes people are in a position, they get
Maybe she could investigate Tony Preckwinkle firing her ethics officer for giving campaign money to Lori Lightfoot.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Would you investigate that? Were you state's attorney?
I would certainly investigate a lot of things that Tony Preckwinkle has done. Campaign literature in her car. You know, there are some issues with her security
SUV.
Detail.
Right.
So, but the problem is when you are the machine's choice, when you are supported by the machine and you owe your political livelihood to the machine, you're not going to indict anybody. I mean, the feds, there's not even cooperation on investigations.
People would say there is the Tony Preckwinkle, the who comes off like the sensible librarian in the sensible shoes, is a progressive, and therefore she cannot be a machine person. She's so, I mean, I see her lionized in newspaper columns as a progressive, and therefore that means, I guess, virtuous to some, at least to many in my business. And how does that jive with this machine talk?
I think what happened in Chicago for the mayoral race was that Tony was a progressive, but Lori was a reformer. And the voters overwhelmingly chose reform. We need reform of our system, both from a social program standpoint, because as you point out, it hasn't worked. But we need reform. We have a state's attorney that is under investigation with a special prosecutor for how she handles big, high-profile cases.
So assess the Jesse Smollett fiasco.
As we know, it is. There is a special prosecutor. So from what we know, Kim Fox said every case is handled this way. Her office was asked to find other cases. They could find none. In fact, there was an article not too long ago about a guy that had one count of filing a false police report. And he said he had to go to trial. It took him, I think, 9 or 10 months and $140,000 to get his name cleared. He didn't get any kind of special deal that the rich and famous get. When you have a situation, whether it's the Jussie Smollett case or any other case like that, there are ways to handle that that get you to the same result. We have a deferred prosecution program. Somebody has to admit guilt, right? That's the first thing. Admit you did something wrong. They have to do community service. I would have had someone in that situation go around to schools, to youth groups, and explain how bad it is to make a false police report on a hate crime, because that affects everybody in the future that has a hate crime.
But if you're Kim Fox and you do that, then you're going to anger Kamala Harris, all the Hollywood stars. You would anger the political aspects of the Me Too movement, which is really, unfortunately so, a liberal hammer against conservatives. They don't apply the same standards to their own party.
And John, I got to jump on this too, because we talked to Sheila O'Brien last week, and the podcast is up, and a lot of the criticism on Twitter, people saying, "Oh, we don't get it. You know, there's 70% of the cases, small cases that come through are first offenses. They're dropped. They do get this." But to the point there, they're overlooking the fact that this was all wrapped up in a bow in the dark of the night, that this thing dropped, and oh, he'd already done community service, or he'd already done some community service.
Well, let's hold on when we talk about small misdemeanor cases that are dropped. This had a 16-count felony indictment. This wasn't, you know, a retail theft of $100, and the guy never had a record, and the prosecutors, in their discretion, said, he's in school, his mother's going to, you know, look after him and make sure he stays on the straight and narrow. They thought that they had enough evidence to indict. And then in the dark of night, without telling the Chicago Police Department, without they sped up the case, they got rid of it, virtually no community service, no fine commensurate with what it cost us.
And no admission. And now he's suing. Okay, so what do you think of Kim Fox's, let me use the legal term, ex parte communications with Tina Chen, Michelle Obama's chief of staff, and also one of the organizers of these grand events that Kim Fox was at in Los Angeles during the time right before the Juicy Smollett thing broke?
I hate to sound like a broken record, but that is why you need an independent prosecutor.
But what do you think
you can't talk to non-parties in a case. Her actions, even as evidenced by some of the emails that have been made public from her office, indicate that there is misconduct. Dan Webb's investigating it. We'll see. But from what we as the public know right now, there seems to be misconduct on the part of the current sitting state's attorney. And as a voter myself and a resident of Chicago, Cook County, Illinois, I think we deserve more. I think it's time that we stop just electing politicians who aren't qualified to do the job and say, hey, we deserve better. And in this race, we have a choice.
You know, it's fascinating, Donna Moore, that you're here because, well, it's fascinating just to talk to you. But what I'm interested in is your recent news conference on Bill Conway and his father and the Carlyle Group, because I've made it a study of mine for years talking about the reason why we're in such bad shape politically. There is a combine, and the combine is a combination of Republican and Democratic insiders working for their own interest at the expense of the people. I've been a critic of some of the people that have gone to prison, like Bill Cellini, part of that combine. And I've also been a critic of Big Bob Schillander, the former Illinois Republican committeeman, who was also part of that combine, a Cellini guy, an Edgar guy. And as far as I'm concerned, Bill Cellini and Schillander should be the horses, like inside a horse costume. I don't know which will be the head and which will be the behind, but upon which Jim Edgar could have ridden that white horse. It was all sick, the whole thing. That's sick. The Democrat, Mike Madigan, the bossism, that's sick. We're all getting screwed from both sides. The combine. Now, where do you come in your news conference?
So the Carlyle Group, Conway's father's company, Conway's family company, paid $4.5 to $5 million in, we'll call, lobbying fees to Bob Schillander, who also had ties with Bill Cellini and Tony Resco. They all had loans with each other.
The focus of a federal prosecution.
Focus of a federal prosecution, because in return for the $4.5 or $5 million in fees paid, the Carlyle Group was able to get hundreds of millions of teacher pension fund money to invest. And at that time, Stuart Levine was on the pension fund board.
Another Republican who went to prison and testified in those cases.
Correct. And part of that testimony was he pushed through the ability for the Carlyle Group to get those investment monies because of deals and repayments of loans or non-repayments of loans amongst the Shalander, Cellini, Resco Group. So it was all a big conspiracy, if you will, to play politics on one side, get the Carlyle Group the investment that they wanted. And after that happened, the Carlyle Group got booted out of Illinois, and we actually passed a law to prevent that kind of activity.
As you know, and you were part of the, not of that prosecution, but you know the United States Justice Department in the Northern District, U.S. Attorney's Office prosecuted.
Correct.
Bill Cellini.
Bill Cellini, Stuart Levine, and Tony Resco, all three.
And you've been part of the legal community for quite some time at a high level, particularly dealing with corporate and financial matters, etc. What's your view of that group? Not Carlyle Group per se, but listen,
Carlyle Group was never prosecuted, let's be clear.
Right.
But it's about the concept of how they do business. It's pay to play. And that is what candidate Conway learned from his father. And that's what concerns me. Why do we need a state's attorney who has been paid for by companies that engage in pay to play? And what kind of influence does taking $5 million, I assume there'll be more money given, $5 million plus on your judgment as the head legal officer for the county, no different than the political machine's influence over Kim Fox.
Well, maybe they could make, if he's elected, he could make Tony Resco and Cellini and Shalander the ethics officers, you know,
for
the county.
I will beat this drum until March 17th. This election should be about justice, not about money. And if you take away candidate Conway's money, he is not experienced for this job. He hasn't practiced law in a decade. And, you know, I think the voters of Cook County recognize finally that they deserve better.
They've recognized it for quite some time, but, you know, the Stockholm Syndrome?
Yes, I'm very familiar with that.
Please, sir, may I have another slap? Please, sir, may I have another slap? So then where does this leave the people of Cook County? You've got Kim Fox, the Juicy Smollett, I guess, hugger. She hugs him, you know, puts him in her motherly arms and matronly arms and gives him a big hug and says, bye, Juicy, you know, become a French actor or whatever you're supposed to do. And then you have Conway, the kid who's supported by his dad. But Donna Moore doesn't have money to compete in this.
Well, I'm raising money, and I am out with the voters because the voters have a choice. The endorsement I want is from the voters of Cook County. And I think that the voters are sick and tired of pay to play and business as usual. And look, this is just gearing up the next 50 days. And I think that voters will make the difference in this race because I'm out there, I'm getting my message across, and they will choose independence, experience, and qualifications.
And one thing I wanted to ask you is, this office is, you know, rife with politics, and to its detriment, I think most of us in the general public would think.
It's Cook County, man.
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, and it's the way it's established. It's the way the rules have been built to make even the fact that we're in a primary for an office like this blows my mind. That being said, you know, you're not a politician. You don't come from a background of politics. How do you think that's going to hurt you and if you do get the job? And how do you think you overcome that?
This is a job that I agree with you that isn't about politics, shouldn't be about politics, because nobody's above the law. It doesn't matter who you are, what party you are, what color you are. This is about holding people accountable if they have a run-in with the law, and how to best deal with that when it happens. I think that also, I don't need a constitutional amendment to raise taxes. I don't need to have any kind of permission from any other politician as to how to do my job. I need to bring leadership to the office. I need to bring common sense in how we charge and how we try cases. And those are all things that I can do on day one. I need to form partnerships. I need to restore the trust of our law enforcement and our first responders because it's not there. You can't have a criminal justice system where you don't have a partnership with law enforcement. That doesn't mean they get a pass because no one's above the law. But that means they have to know that you're going to work with them, that you're going to respect them. That's not there right now. And that's in part why our justice system is in such disarray.
So to that point, I mean, the consensus, unfortunately, on the street is that when this vote comes down on March 17th, that you're up against the incumbent who's got the backing of every union, as John said, that can crawl out and endorse her.
The machine, everything.
Yeah, the whole machine. And the guy with the deep pockets. So I think the odds are that you're going to be left out in the cold on that because of just the facts of how politics work. Is there any energy or inkling that, you know, if this falls apart, you go in as an independent, or you, why not run as a Republican if you're really about unseating her and fixing this problem that's facing all of us?
I don't think that Conway is resonating with voters. And I don't think, no matter how much money his dad wants to spend to buy him this office, that he will win. That's my perception of what the voters are thinking, what they're talking about, what they're saying. I also think that they don't want the same old, same old. We're starting to see that with the election of our mayor in Chicago. They want change. And if they want change, there's only one candidate that they can vote for.
Mr. Conway, well, obviously Kim Fox is running against the Chicago Police Department. This is just stunning that a prosecutor would exacerbate a war with coppers. There's always tensions. Why didn't you charge this guy? Well, why didn't you get me the evidence? Back and forth forever. But this has become political, and she's playing the race card on it too. So, and Conway is not asking for the FOP endorsement because he knows he won't get it. And he thinks it might be a liability. So he's told me, I'm not going to seek it. I don't want it.
And they've endorsed the Republican in the primary.
Right.
But I don't think they're ever they.
But have they endorsed the Democrat? Would you accept the Democratic endorsement from the FOP?
My understanding, and I have not been contacted by the FOP, my understanding is that allegedly they had some endorsement session, maybe. Our campaign was not told about it, and they endorsed Fioretti. I separate out the FOP from the rank-and-file police officers and all our first responders. Those are the people whose support I want. That's where I want to form a better partnership, because I think Kim Fox has, as you said, John, has drawn a wedge between law enforcement and the prosecutor's office. And you can't have effective law enforcement with that happening. And that's not that anybody gets a pass for doing something wrong, but you have to work together. Let's do some joint training. Let's make sure that prosecutors understand what they need from police, and the police understand what prosecutors need from them.
I know we're going on long, but I do have to ask you this. I'm an opponent of decarceration. It's a term now, but it's all over the country, and there's been prosecutors funded by the hard left, by the Soros group, to decarcerate, to basically empty the jails. I just happen to think that, you know, you take your violent thug. I don't want you hitting some old grandmother in a walker who really needs a walker, not like Harvey Weinstein. And I just worry about them. But what do you make of the Kim Fox, Tony Preckwinkle, Tim Evans, troika, where they, you know, basically play with the bonds, reduce bonds, because they don't want people in jail?
So the Cook County Jail, which the main purpose of Cook County Jail is for pretrial detention. It's not the prison system where after a conviction somebody goes. And the Cook County Jail has been pretty much halved in its size. I think it went from somewhere around 11 or 12,000 to about 5,000.
Too small.
And the issue is that you have to, the state's attorney, in my opinion, has to advocate for pre-trial detention of violent offenders. Because what happens if you don't is the violent offenders go back and terrorize our neighborhoods that are most vulnerable to it, and they terrorize witnesses, so they don't want to come forward, which means we can't solve cases, we can't prosecute cases. It's, again, how do you use your prosecutorial discretion? I agree. Nonviolent, low-level offenders shouldn't be in jail simply because they can't make bond. I agree. I think we have to have a better coordination with our mental health facilities, because a lot of the folks that are in county jail really need to be in a mental health facility.
Yeah, you've checked the boxes. Mental health, blah, blah. I understand. It's not blah, blah, blah. It's serious, because people shouldn't be incarcerated because they are poor or because they're mentally ill. But when they're violent and they go on home electronic home monitoring, and then they plug, as I've written in the past, I've written, like, what, how many of these, four or five of these columns already? There are murderers,
yes.
Rapists,
yes.
Other thugs, kidnappers on home electronic home monitoring.
Should not happen. In fact, Tom Dart said we have over 50 murder defendants on electronic monitoring, and he's never seen that. And by the way, he doesn't know where half of them are.
Yeah, because his office can't handle it.
That's right. Never before have the state's attorney's office, advocated for electronic monitoring of a murder defendant.
But under what? Who's the
under Fox? Under Fox, that has become, again, as Dart said, he's never seen these kinds of numbers for violent offenders to get electronic monitoring. The state's attorney is not advocating for pretrial detention.
Donna Moore, you have an uphill climb politically, but I always believe in fairness, even, and I'm not trying to wear it as a badge. I'm just saying, whether you could win or not, the issue is the ideas that you're presenting are vital to the people of Cook County. They have to be heard, and they shouldn't be, I don't think handicapping horse races is valid in the context of a city and a county that is facing overwhelming violence. And whether you can play with the statistics or not, people are leaving. We lost 100,000 African Americans in just a few years because basically not only the taxes, but because of the crime, and they're worried.
This race is about justice. It shouldn't be about money.
Donna Moore, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way.
Thanks and for having me.
Say hi to HUD.
I will. He enjoyed his time here last week.
I'd like to thank Donna Moore for being here. Thanks, Donna. It was an interesting discussion. And also, of course, Jeff Carlin of WGN Radio, my co-host. And I guess the only regret I have about Jeff is now that I can't eat pies, I can't eat the pies that he bakes. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and member of its editorial board. And you know where you are? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN+.